Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna, along with audio engineer Brother Sunil, signing in from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. You're tuned to Thursday Live on Radio Sai's Asia Stream. Good morning, dear listeners, and welcome to Morning Glory. I hope you enjoyed the morning Vedam and Bhajans that came to you live from the Sai Kulwant Hall till just a few moments ago. We are now back at the Prashanti Digital Studios, and the time here is 9:40 a.m. Thank you for your company on this mild and very pleasant Thursday morning, September the 12th, 2013. The scene in the Sai Kulwant Hall right now is one of stillness and serenity. The morning Mangal Aarti has just concluded, and devotees are lined up very quietly on their way to the blessed shrine, that is the holy Mahasamadhi of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And what is adding to the perfection of this moment is the fact that Prashanti Nilayam and the surrounding areas have received plenty of rainfall over the last few days and also at night times. As a result, the valley is lush green and cool, and most importantly, for the very first time in a very long time, the river Chitravati has water and the water is flowing. Day before yesterday's downpour at night came just in time for the Ganesha Visarjan ceremony yesterday. If not for the water in the Chitravati, where would we immerse all those very many idols of Lord Ganesha? I do hope you watched the live webcast of the Mandir program yesterday on radiosai.org, and if you missed it, you can still enjoy it at our video archive at radiosai.org or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Radio Sai. All the various Sai institutions, from the Central Trust to the hospitals, schools, colleges, each group came and presented their colorful and creative Ganesha floats to Bhagwan, and then took the Ganesha for immersion to the Chitravati River. The atmosphere was charged with excitement and spiritual fervor as the ceremony marked the conclusion of the Ganesha festival. Here then are the current weather conditions prevailing in Prashanti Nilayam. The temperature outside our studio right now is 24 degrees Celsius, and we are expecting a high of 30 Celsius later in the day, with clear blue skies for most part. Intermittent rains are expected for the rest of this week. Air quality, as always, is excellent in Prashanti Nilayam, with zero air pollution levels. Today on Morning Glory, I have lined up a power-packed program for you. At the bottom of the hour, you will hear the fourth and final part of our Fleeting Moments interview with Mr. K. Arun Kumar, an alumnus of Baba's University. Before that, I will play for you a part of the question and answer session from Mrs. Phyllis Crystal's talk that she delivered in Los Angeles, USA in the year 2011. At that time, Mrs. Crystal was 97 years old. Currently, she's 99. Just an interesting trivia, I thought. Coming up right here, right now, I have a telephone interview that we recorded just yesterday with the All India President of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization of India, Mr. V. Srinivasan. In this conversation, Mr. V. Srinivasan updates all our global listeners on the Sai organization's relief work going on in Uttarakhand and how it is time for synergizing the efforts of our dedicated Seva Dal volunteers and the knowledge pool of Radio Sai's global listeners. Dear listeners, you may recall that earlier this year, on June 17, 2013, the North Indian state of Uttarakhand was devastated due to flash floods. Located in the mountains, which are home to some of the holiest of India's shrines, the region experienced unprecedented devastation. The Sri Satya Sai Seva organization sprung into action immediately and started providing all possible relief to the victims. In an interview that was aired right here on Morning Glory on July the 8th, 2013, Mr. V. Srinivasan gave us a status update of the ground reality there and our short and long-term relief goals. Yesterday, we caught up with him on the progress of our efforts so far and on the challenges ahead. He also touched upon the response of the Sai family across India and the globe to his earlier report on the magnitude of the work involved. And very importantly, he explained how the global community, the global Sai community, can help our Seva Dals save lives in the mountains of Uttarakhand by sharing their ideas, information and expertise on survival techniques through winter conditions in remote mountains. Dear listeners, this short telephone interview is a must listen, as Mr. Srinivasan touches upon some very pertinent issues that concern all of us as caring human beings. And I'm very pleased to play it for you right now. Sairam sir, and thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Sairam Karuna, nice talking to you again.
And I'm sure our listeners are very pleased to hear from you. Sir, on July the 8th, 2013, you had last updated Radio Sai listeners about the involvement of the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization in the relief work at Uttarakhand. Now, since that date, a lot more water has flowed down and over those bridges. As of today, September 11th, what is the current situation in terms of our relief work?
I think, as I mentioned in the last interview, the first phase of our relief work was directed towards the pilgrims who had come there for darshan. And we had concentrated on them at the airport and the railway stations, the bus terminus, etc. And gradually, as that wound down, the shifted our emphasis towards the residents of the villages in Himachal who had been totally cut off by this flood on there. So the main effort has been and is continuing to be to get as much relief material to them as possible until some kind of normal life resumes.
I see.
At present, conditions cannot be said to be normal by any stretch of the imagination. They have lost their houses. They are living in makeshift accommodations. And they are not having access to the necessities which they need for their daily life. So our efforts are continuing to be to deliver to them articles of food, things like cooking oil, and we also, they need blankets. Winter is fast approaching, and it's really something which we are very much concerned about, as to how these people are going to navigate through this strong winter, which is going to be there within the next 6 weeks or so.
That, yeah, it begins early in the mountains, definitely.
Yes, so we are presently continuing to give them all medicines, blankets, food articles, clothing, and also we are giving them the solar lantern, which gives them some light in the darkness, helps children to read something. Of course, schools are also very badly affected, and we want to see that as we go forward, if we are able to have a regular communication with these people, to set up some kind of schools, you know, not really formal schools, but at least some learning and teaching centers, so that the children are not totally cut off from what they were learning before. But this is a little ways down yet, because the problem we face, as you will be reading on my update report, is this year the rain seems to be continuing, and it is not as if there has been a real end to the monsoon. In September, which is usually a good month, and still we have rains every few days. So this has hampered a lot of movement and even roads which have been repaired with some makeshift arrangements. they are getting washed off. So
that must be so difficult.
It's a very tough logistic exercise to be able to plan how we are going to reach a place. You know, today we are told that there is some road link open and we mobilize our small trucks and vans and then we go some distance and find that it is not possible to proceed further.
Mm.
So what they do is in Seva, they'll then try to see if they can trek the rest of the way on foot. And that itself is also a challenge because these packages which we are giving for each family weigh upwards of 20 kilograms each.
Oh, it must be so hard.
Yes, and to carry them on their backs, especially
in the mountains.
Yes, and they are ordinary people, you know. They are not people who are hardy mountaineers or sherpas as such. So to carry that becomes a problem, then we have to do some repackaging to make smaller packages and then see how to move it. But still our sevadals are persistent because they are eagerly awaited at the target villages. And when they reach there, they are really tears of joy to see these people. And this is where we really pray to Bhagawan to guide us and give us strength to be able to accomplish this tough task. Mm-hmm. So coming to the real details, as I said, the relief is the present activity, relief for the residents of those villages. Some of them have left, you know, they have gone down to the plains to be with their relatives and are maybe planning to come back next spring. But there is an innate fear among these residents that if they leave their present locations, somebody may take over their sites, and this is a major problem for them. So they are trying to stay as long as they can, and this is where they need help. And we are trying to do our best to see how we can deliver that help on them. So the details of what we are giving to each village, etc., are mentioned in my report.
Yes, I have it.
And you would see that we have worked in about 17 villages.
That is right.
In about three districts to deliver these materials. We are always exploring alternative routes. We're trying to consult the local people whether there is any other trekking path which we can use. But again, the rains are, you know, this makes the path slippery and the soil there is unstable. You know, it is really unlike any other place, I would say. It is a totally different experience from what we had in Orissa. But everything is a learning for us, and whatever lessons we are learning, we are trying to absorb within the national organization to see how it can improve the overall efficiency of our service activities. That's the present status, Karuna. Is there any specific points you have? I'll be happy to clarify.
Surya, in our last conversation, you had mentioned about the proposal to take some prefabricated houses there and help provide shelter for the local population. How is that moving along?
We are ready with that. You know, we have the types of houses identified. We have the manufacturers on standby. But, you know, we are specific that we will not construct at the same sites where the old houses were there, because many of them were unauthorized constructions, and they are right on the river bank.
Hmm.
And that is why they were the first to get washed.
Yeah, very vulnerable, naturally.
Yes, and if a subsequent flood is, you know, with the global warming which is taking place, I don't think that we have seen the last of the floods. There's going to be recurrences of this kind of flooding, And we need to really plan for this on a national basis. The government should really look into this to see how to have a total restructuring of the development of Himachal Pradesh. I'm sorry,
Uttarakhand.
Because otherwise, if it is just more of the same as is happening now, we are going to see more and more such disasters. So coming to our own, we have conveyed to the Uttarakhand government formally a letter that we are willing to, the Satisfied Central Trust is willing to put up houses there for the people who have lost their homes. But we require some sites a little further away from the river bank. And this is where we are looking to help from the government.
Mm-hmm.
We have not heard yet about the proposal which we have given, and we are following up this matter. And if we get a green signal, we have lined up the professors from IIT who have also approved this technology, which incidentally comes from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
The manufacturers are also ready to come and discuss with the engineers of the government to convince them about the technical suitability of these constructions and how exactly we will building these habitations.
I see.
So I think really we have to wait, and we are hoping and praying that we will get some clearance so that these will become a model village, because as you know, I think I did tell you that we are not just planning on building the houses, we are planning a total interconnected drainage system for the whole colony so that there is no more pollution.
Mm.
That this will be all treated, the sewage will be handled properly. And the river waters, you know, the great concern on a national basis for purification of the Ganga. At least we do our bit to make sure that we show how this can be done.
Mm-hmm.
So the proposal is a holistic one, and I hope the government will really take a positive attitude towards this proposal.
I see, but considering the fact that the winter is around the corner, it looks like something that might come up for more work only after spring next year.
Yes, I think we have lost time, and you're right, it looks a bit impractical to think of doing something this year, but hopefully we can start in the spring next year, and in the meantime, we are delivering, I don't know whether it's mentioned in the list, we are delivering special polypropylene sheets,
mm-hmm.
which are waterproof. And apart from the tents which we gave, we are delivering polypropylene sheets so that they will afford some degree of protection for the people who have to stay in these makeshift accommodation which they have provided for themselves.
Mm-hmm. I see. Sir, since
where we stand there, Karuna.
Oh, I see. Well, since we last spoke in July the 8th, when you connected with Radio Side Global listeners, what was the response like? I would just be curious to know from our listeners.
I think nationally we have had a very good response to the activities of the State Sai Organization.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, they did set up a relief fund, and they have received quite a lot of money from different parts of the country, and perhaps some of these came from the relatives of people abroad who were also keen to do their bit. As you know, I had clarified that this accounts opened by the State Seva Organization cannot receive donations in foreign currency.
That's right.
So that account has been receiving inflows in rupees only from people all over India. I'm sure several of your listeners have participated in this effort.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as overseas donors, we had told them to roof their contributions to the Sea Satisfied Central Trust. And there have been contributions received in the accounts of the Sea Satisfied Central Trust, with a specific request that these contributions should be used for the rehabilitation work in Uttarakhand.
Mm-hmm.
So these amounts are being held waiting for the commencement of the rehab work in Uttarakhand.
Now, what can our listeners do other than pray to Swami that he may clear the obstacles in our path to help these people? What else can we do in this project?
I think, you know, especially people who are abroad, I think we need to do a little out-of-the-box thinking now.
Mm-hmm.
How do people survive and how does one make life bearable when one doesn't have a permanent accommodation in very adverse climatic conditions? In sub-zero conditions, what is the kind of things that we have to have, or what should we do in the case of, you know, whether it is makeshift accommodation, whether it is it's not things like sweaters and woolen which we are sourcing in India. But if there are some kind of other kind of dresses or clothing which can be helpful, this is something we can look at, you know, that this will be part of our relief operation. And are there any kind of heating devices? Are there water heaters? Are there any kind of, you know, though we are delivering the solar lanterns, that provides one kind of facility, but there are other things one needs. One needs heating of the house. What, I won't even use that word, that is luxury. At least providing warmth to people when the bitterly cold night. Whether we can get something to heat water. Because what is happening is that when you continue to use firewood, you're actually denuding the whole forest.
Yes.
And this is contributing further to aggravate the ecological problem.
Exactly.
So are there any solutions to this? And this is something we are beginning to think now as to what is the kind of innovative solutions we can look at.
What do hikers and mountaineers and people who go on these difficult treks and expeditions, what do they use? It would be good to know.
We are having to learn things which we never thought about earlier.
I can imagine.
And perhaps your global network of listeners, some of them may have thoughts and ideas, and whether we can really analyze these concepts into providing further relief for the afflicted people of such things.
I'm sure our listeners are paying attention to what you're saying, and we will hear from them. And together we hope to make a difference. Is there anything else you'd like to add, sir?
Well, I have sent you quite a lot of pictures.
Yes, we will be using them on the website.
Yeah, and many of them do tell, each one of them tells a story, human relations on that. It shows ordinary people who have moved into this, giving a loving seva for people who are receiving that with great joy. Yeah, really, it shows the bonding of individuals with the grace of God. And every session of relief is preceded by prayers to Bhagwan. We do organize bhajans. So people there also are getting familiar with the Sai culture, if I may use, of how we dedicate all our actions to Bhagwan. And it is that we are just instruments, and the results are all in His hands. I think those pictures really say a lot.
True.
And I would draw the attention of your listeners to those photographs.
They will be posted on the website, sir. And I believe everyone receives a Vibhuti packet and Bhagwan's picture as well.
Bhagwan's picture, Vibhuti packet. These are things. In fact, this is as far as we are looking at. Is there anything else we can do which is, you know, cost effective to see that we are not alone and that all of us are with them, whole Sai families with them. These are areas we are now beginning to think. How do they get access to, shall I say, Radio Sai? And also to perhaps some bhajans and music.
You have the right solution, sir. Just get Radio Sai up there somehow through internet.
This is what we are beginning to think, you know. Instead of looking at the basics only, now I think we need to go a little further and rack our brains and pray to Bhagwan to give us some new ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, best of luck with those, and we hope to connect with you again in a few weeks' time when there is more development in this project.
I do. I look forward to that.
Thank you, sir, for joining us. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, and welcome back. You just heard Mr. V. Srinivasan over a telephone interview, and he's the All India President of the Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization, and in this conversation he brought us up to speed on the ground reality of our relief efforts in the mountains of Uttarakhand. And we apologize for the slightly poor audio quality. The phone connection was not as good as it could have been. Now, if you have any thoughts, information or experience on surviving out there in the mountains during winter time, please share it with us to help the stranded and suffering victims of the Uttarakhand tragedy. Tips on using non-conventional survival skills or materials are particularly needed. Do you know of any specific materials such as high-density fleecy that can keep them warm in these difficult climbs where there is no heating whatsoever right now, except, of course, by burning wood? So please share what you know liberally with us. And if anyone out there knows about the special blankets that are used by emergency workers for victims of hypothermia, please go ahead and tell us about it. Manufacturers, what the material is, where can they be sourced from, anything that you know about these matters, we would welcome all information. And one email from you could actually save many lives. We will gladly direct all your suggestions to Mr. Srinivasan and his team. You can reach us by email at listener@radiosai.org. And very shortly, we'll post a detailed report of the relief work so far with statistics and some very telling pictures. So please keep visiting our website, radiosai.org, as we keep tracking this very important story for all of us. Up next is a question and answer session from Mrs. Phyllis Crystal's talk given at a Sai Centre in Los Angeles, USA in the year 2011. Last week on Morning Glory, you heard her talk at this venue, and today we have lined up a part of the Q&A session from the same event. I do hope Mrs. Crystal answers some questions that are on your mind today. Over now to the 99-year young and happening, dynamic and active and wise and experienced Mrs. Crystal.
Now, it occurs to me that some of you may have questions, or you may want me to talk a little bit more about some aspect of Baba's teachings or his words or what we can learn from him. So, if there are questions, I would be delighted to answer them. When I'm asked to talk about Baba, it's such a huge subject. I've been seeing him since 1973. And so there have been a lot of experiences. But what would be appropriate? What do you all need? What would be helpful for you all? So it's much easier when people tell me, please tell me about this, or please answer this question. Then I know what you need to know. Well, we've been given many different exercises in the work to connect us to what, I call the high sea, one of which is the maypole. And I didn't bring my traveling maypole with me. But I don't need to, because we got a picture of Baba here. I don't know quite how many years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, I was asked to talk, and I gave my talk because it was a youth conference that I had been asked to. And then Baba asked that I speak again. And here are all the youth and thousands of other people. And I thought, what am I going to do? I've spoken already. What am I going to do this time? So I was in my wheelchair and was wheeled up to Baba for his blessing. And he would talk to me for a while. And then he said, and how long are you going to speak, Mrs. Crispo? And out of my mouth came, well, you should know better than I, because you're going to have to do it. And he roared with laughter. And then I went to the microphone, and I thought, what's going to happen now? I've given my talk, I have no idea what else is going to come. And I, all of a sudden, I found that I was leading people through the maypole, but not using the maypole, using Baba's image. And what came out was that instead of connecting to the high sea via the sphere at the top of the maypole, representing the high sea or the God Self, I said, here is Baba. Imagine that you have a ribbon or a wire or a ray of light between your heart and Baba's heart. And that was the way I led them through the whole maypole. And I can lead you all through it if you would like, so that you can get an experience of being able to make the contact not only with your own God Self, but also making the connection with Baba, so that he who represents your God Self can then use you as his instrument. Well, I was wondering whether I should answer some more questions, and then I can do it at the end. Okay?
The next question is a question on healing.
Yes.
Baba emphasizes relying on the divine.
Yes.
On the other hand, he recommends the most advanced technology. Mm-hmm. Is this a contradiction or a dilemma?
No, I don't think it's a contradiction, because not everybody is able to rely on the divine. And so he provides the methods for healing for those who need it. And he also recommends that you do, you know, when you're ready, rely only on him. So he doesn't expect you to jump in one leap from where you are and what you do believe and what you do think to something that's so different. It's a baby step. He doesn't ever expect you to do a huge leap. Like with the Sealing on Desires program, he doesn't ask you to give up all your desires, no. Only to cut out waste of money, food, time and energy. And that's the baby steps to take us eventually to be desireless. And this is the same thing. It's a gradual training. He's very gentle and very thoughtful. Okay?
When we ask God a question, mm-hmm. will he answer, and will he answer always?
Yes. Yes, always. But not always when you expect it or want it. It's when it's right. Here again, I can give an example. My husband and Jack Hislop were asked by Baba to form the organization in this country. Only one of a couple was allowed to be part of the organization. So we wives of the organization members were allowed to sit in to a meeting, but not speak. This was quite hard for most of us. So we discovered this particular time that many of the members of the organization were at the ashram at the same time. It was unplanned. And so they all decided that they would have a little sort of a mini meeting. And it was outside on the grass. And we all gathered around and then we were all discussing some of the problems in the organization. And there was one particular person who was really quite a problem, insisted on always being the one that was going to decide what was going to be done. So we were all sitting there, and Baba would come in from time to time. So one time he came in and sat down, and they were all discussing this, and in my mind was this question, how can we really tell whether we are following what Baba wants, or whether we're following what another person wants, or whether we're following what we want? I wanted to be sure that I was always following what the High C or Baba wants. And this was going around in my mind. And Baba all of a sudden pointed his finger and said, Mrs. Crystal, you have a question. So I said, I'm sorry, Baba, but wives aren't allowed to talk in these meetings. And he drew himself up as if he were 10 feet tall, which he has a habit of doing. It's an illusion, but it's very real looking. And he said, Swami is telling you, now ask your question. So I asked it. And he looked around at the people and embarrassed me even further and said, you see, it's a very good question. And then he gave me the answer, and I'll never forget it. He said, when you have a question, when you have a problem, take one of my photographs. Go to a very quiet place where you're absolutely alone and be silent. And then from your heart, ask the question. And within 20 minutes, the answer will be coming to you. Now, my experience has come as been that you don't always get the answer in the 20 minutes, but it's sent in the 20 minutes. But it comes when you're ready to receive it and when the answer to the question is ready. But he always answers, or God always answers, or your High C always answers.
One of the biggest obstacles on the spiritual path is anger and lust. How do you control
anger and love?
Anger and lust.
Oh, yes. No.
How do you control it?
Baba is often discussing two of the worst problems. I would think that anger, he always feels, is the worst of all. And I remember one time he told us that a fit of anger would use up or waste the energy that was received from 3 months of food. It's that disastrous, it's that negative. So he says, give the anger to me, or give the lust to me. But with the method that I've been introduced to, as you know, has got another way, which I think is a very simple way, and that is to find a symbol for that anger or that lust, and put it in the figure eight, and then go through the cutting of the ties. And that works very well. And I'm not going to go into a description of the way that we use the method, because it's in the various books. But it really is amazing. And I realize more and more that this method can help us to put into practice Baba's teachings. And I think now he really seems to want to have it used. Sometimes, when the karma is finished, then there will be reversal. But you can't insist on it. You can't say, I've got to be healed. You, really, all you can say is, am I ready? Have I learned the lesson? And then ask what this can teach us. Because we can learn from everyone in our life what we need to learn. We can also learn from everything that happens to us. We can also learn from the illnesses that we have. There's always a lesson. And it might be just a tolerance for other people who are sick. Or it might be patience. It might be the fact that you have to really trust and not try to get rid of the illness, but just don't let it get in the way. Because a lot of us will say, I can't do this because I've got this problem or that problem or the other problem. But we don't have to let the illness get in the way. Baba says that he doesn't feel the illness ever. I've noticed that when I'm doing a seminar or I'm doing a single session or I'm talking like this, I don't notice any of the pains. It's a dimension on which, or a level on which you live. You can't insist on being healed, but you can overcome the control of the sickness over you. And we have a little symbol that we do, a figure eight, which helps us to stop the control of anyone or anything over us. And you can read about that in the books.
This is not a question, it's an expression of gratitude. person says, it's not a question, but rather a thank you for your message, which has had a profound effect on me, and which I did, in which I was desperately in need of. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your thank you. It's a pleasure to be able to answer the questions. I know I don't get the answers, but I've learned to trust. And the first time I learned to do this was when we were at the ashram and we had an interview with Baba. And he said, why are you so worried, Mrs. Crystal? He always called me Mrs. Crystal. Why are you so worried? You seem to be worried today. And I said, well, we're leaving tomorrow. And we're going to England, and I've been asked to give the very first seminar I've ever given, and I'm scared to death to talk to a lot of people. And he looked at me rather surprised, and he said, but you talk to people all day long. And I said, yes, but only to one person at a time. And he said, yes, but if you think of it, and one plus one plus one plus one is one, just concentrate on one.
What wisdom can you pass on to women to guide women on their spiritual path during these times?
Okay. I think women have a tremendously important role because they are more capable of expressing love than men are. And the reason being that little boy babies are usually trained from the time they're born that they must never choke, at least it was in my day, and I think it still is pretty much. They've got to be macho. They mustn't be feminine. They mustn't show feelings, that they mustn't be frightened. They've got to be strong. And this makes it very difficult for men to show love. They really haven't had much practice, especially if they haven't been loved by their parents or they've been under strict control of their parents to be macho. So women don't have that problem. So, and the women are much closer to their hearts because they are the ones that have to take care of the children. Baba says, I forget how many positive qualities women have, more than men. I think it's 6 more than men or something like that. So they have been given more qualities, more abilities, more strengths. And so they are the ones that can teach the men. And I think that that's what's going to have to happen. The men are going to have to be brought up from babyhood, not to have to be macho, not to have to suppress their feelings, because we all need to express our love. And it seems a tragic that this imbalance has happened in the world. And that's why the violence is everywhere so apparent.
This is sort of all of us.
How did your relationship with your mother influence your work in helping others?
Oh dear. Well, as I said before, I had a very, very strict and very, very controlling mother. As I look back now, I think that that was a gift, and I thought it was a curse when I was growing up. I think to answer that question, she was a very angry woman, a very controlling woman, more controlling than anyone I've ever met. But I think that it was a benefit because I learned not to be controlling. And that was what I needed to learn in this life. You see, the members of every species learn how to live their daily life by copying the parents and the other adults. You watch birds or cats or dogs or any creature. The little ones always watch the parents, and the parents always show them what they should be doing. And human children do the same. But human children also have the other possibility of rebelling and doing completely opposite if the parents are showing them a very negative way. So I think that what I learned from my mother was not to be like that, to be more loving and not quite so angry.
This is a very practical question.
Oh.
What advice...
Aren't they all practical?
What advice would you give to a young woman who wants to become a book writer?
Well, the only thing I can tell you about that is to tune in or make contact with who you really are, your real self, your high C, your God self. Bob always calls it the God self. And if it's flowing, then write. If it's not flowing, don't try to write. That's my only advice, because that's the only way I could write. I couldn't have written a word without doing it that way.
How can we differentiate between God's voice and our mind?
Just see what it feels like, what it sounds like when you're getting a message or a thought. Just use a measuring tape. Is it the sort of answer that you would get from the God self? Is it loving? Is it kind? Is it helpful? And that would be one way. And then I would share with you what happened to me when I asked that question long ago. I was having lunch with a friend, and as we stood on the corner of a street to go to our separate cars, it was here in California, I said to her, wouldn't it be wonderful if we got some clear sign when we were really in contact with the high sea or the God force? And when I said that, I was absolutely astonished, because it was exactly as if somebody had poured ice cold water down my spine. And that's my sign. I still have it. And so when people come for single sessions, and they say, they see me reaching back, because I do instinctively, when this cold shower takes place, they know that I'm really in tune with my high C, and they can trust it. So I always suggest that you ask for a sign, and that various people have had different signs. Some people will get prickles in their fingers, or in their third eye, or across their lips. You will always get a sign if you ask for it.
How were you able to share your experiences with your family about Baba, and how did they react, positively, negatively?
Okay. Well, I had a husband and two daughters. My husband, as I told you, along with Jack Hislop, were the ones who made the guidelines for the foundation here in the States. So he didn't need an introduction. I had the two daughters, and they grew up with the method I was being shown, so it was very easy for them just to slip over into Baba's teachings and accept them, because they were so similar. So there was no problem with them. But with my grandchildren, my younger daughter was killed in a car accident when her daughter was 3 and her son was 8 months. And so that was a big shock to the family. But the family into which she married did not believe in Baba, did not have any religious tendencies at all, and thought that we were crazy, and obviously did not want me to teach children about either my work or Baba. So I absolutely didn't say a word on purpose, unless they asked, and then I would just say as little as I could. But they both thanked me now, because now that I haven't pushed it, they have come around and are very much into Baba, and I've been able to take them to him. And Baba urges us, don't advertise me. I can do a very good job on my own. He said that in an interview once, and we were so amused. So he urges us not to advertise him, but let our life show other people the effect of the teachings. As he says, his life is his message, and our life should be his message too. And therefore, we don't have to tell anyone. I know most of you who've gone to Baba for the first time, you're all lit up, you feel his love, you want to share it, and I call this the champagne period. And we're all tempted to tell all our friends, all our family, and urge them to believe this, to go see Baba or read the books, That is fatal. They are not going to be interested because they're being pushed. I always say, wait till they ask and then tell them. And only tell them until you see their eyes glaze over. Or they will kind of fidget. And then you know you've said enough. And if you continue that way, eventually they might come around. But you see, you can't control them. And you can't really force them. It's better to say nothing.
When we do service and think that we are God's instrument, how can we protect ourselves so that we do not become proud?
I think a lot of people can't manage that because a lot of people have been brought up with such a low self-image that when they are shown that they can do something in the world, then they begin to get ego involved and proud. I think the only thing we can do is just to say to Baba or the God Self or whatever you want to call it, I will be your instrument. And then you know that you are being used. You are the instrument. You are not the originator. You're not the doer. Because Baba says we should not be the doer. He's the doer. Or the God Self that is our real self is the doer. And if we can remember that, then we can get around that problem because it's always a big one.
Can you tell us how better nutrition can help us and help sleep? There might be sleep problems.
I think there are a lot of doctors here today. I would rather defer to them. I think I've told you what Baba did about my diet, and I really fought him because I wanted to do what he was telling everybody else to do. But in the Sealing on Desires program, where he gave me a whole interview explaining it, he said that we should balance. We should have enough protein and enough carbohydrates and figure out what would be the right quantity for each, as we do for sleep or any other activity. So he recommends the sattvic diet, which is the vegetarian diet, but as you see, there are exceptions. So he really puts it in our lap. We've got to figure that out ourselves with the help of nutritionists. So it's different for each person.
Can you talk more about getting the divine energy and then how do you keep in constant contact?
Well, I think I've mentioned that I've learned to just keep tuned in and keep asking Aunt Hemal, how do you want to use me now? And then follow whatever comes quickly to my mind. So I might wake up in the morning and ask, well, now, what do you want me to do today? And then an idea will come, and then I'll do it. Or I might ask, well, what do you want me to do this moment, right now? I've got such and such time. And then the idea will come. It's really practice. You're not going to be perfect at first. You're going to make a lot of mistakes. But if you keep doing it, you'll find that it will answer that question.
How can we reach you?
I try not to give too many when I'm traveling because I usually do a seminar and I prefer that the people hear what comes up in the seminar. Also, my time is very limited when I'm traveling. But when I'm at home, it's not very often I am at home, I do have one day each week, and that's Wednesday. They're always organized by a friend of mine. And I do fit people in between. But obviously, with the traveling so much, I can't give as many as I used to. So I usually like people to email me and tell me what their problem is. And then I try to take the people who are more urgent. Otherwise, I recommend that they get in touch with someone else in their country or in their town. And I sometimes do sessions over the telephone. The reason I've given the training sessions is to train more and more people to be able to do this work so that I don't have to answer all the requests. So I've given one training program for 2 years, and I'm in the middle of the second one. And apparently I hear that there's a waiting line for a third one. But I'll try to explain to the people who are organizing these for me. If I were to live long enough to do the third one, by the time it was finished, I would be 100 years old. And I'm not sure I'm going to be capable of finishing that. But that's not in my hands. That's in Baba's or the High Priest's hands. Thank you for being such a wonderful group of people here with whom I can share. And thank you for asking me. And I wish you all, not just Sai Ram, but a very happy 2011.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back. You just heard a question and answer session with Mrs. Phyllis Crystal, the author of many books, including Sai Baba, The Ultimate Experience. This question and answer session was the concluding part of a talk that she delivered at a Sai Center in Los Angeles, USA in the year 2011. We eagerly look forward to your feedback. As always, you can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you for staying tuned to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India. The time at the Radio Sai Studio right now is 10:36 a.m. and today is the 12th of September 2013. And now, before I bid you Sai Ram and thank you for your company on today's show, I'm delighted to play the fourth and final part of a Fleeting Moments interview with Mr. K. Arun Kumar, an alumnus of Baba's University. Here he is in conversation with Radio Sai's very own Bishu Prushti. Please enjoy the moving conclusion to this detailed interview. Till we meet next Thursday, please be well, stay inspired, and keep seeking. And remember, do whatever it takes to be in a positive space. Sai Ram, and over now to Brother K. Arun Kumar.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, a series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. Today we play for you the fourth part of the conversation with Mr. K. Arun Kumar. Hailing from Vishakhapatnam in Andhra Pradesh, Arun did his graduation in civil engineering in the Indian Institute of Technology, IIT Kharagpur. In 1999, he stepped into the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning for his management degree, which he completed in 2001. And after this, he was most blessed to serve Baba at very close quarters for 4 years till 2005. During this period, following Baba's directions, he also served in Radio Sai. He currently lives and works in Hyderabad in Andhra Pradesh. In the first three parts of this conversation, Arun shared about how he became a student in Baba's college and some of the telling moments with Bhagwan which taught invaluable lessons of life. In today's episode, he goes on to share how he happened to join Radio Sai and recount memories of how Bhagwan guided him during those initial years of Radio Sai. This was recorded on July 14, 2013. And in conversation with him is Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti.
So you didn't give me a formal job which would ensure that I got some salary or something.
Yes.
And 3 months had passed and my resources were almost empty.
So actually it's a very difficult situation because, you know, you can't go and tell Swami, give me a job, because actually he's giving you some job.
Yeah, I'm actually doing something really wonderful.
Wonderful. But there is nothing to
buy your needs. I can't ask from God a salary for serving him.
Yeah. Actually it's a very precarious situation.
Yeah, very peculiar
situation.
Because
you can't tell Swami, give me a job.
Yeah.
You can't tell Swami, give me money. You don't know what to do.
Exactly. So I was running out of my resources and I just had 1,000 rupees left, and one day I got really frustrated and I went to the Ganesha in front of
You didn't want to ask your parents.
I didn't want to ask my parents. That was one of the reasons. I thought it's time, because even when I did my MBA, I didn't put any burden, because whatever I had saved when I did a job for 1 year, I kind of used for the MBA. And of course, Swami gave the entire education free of cost. So all the thing, only I had to take care of my expenses in terms of the food. So I didn't want to ask my parents. And that day, when I got really frustrated, I stood in front of the Ganesha, which is there in front of the Mandir gate, the Ganesha gate. And I vented out my frustration inside my heart, saying, I'm not going to ask my parents anymore. You have given me a duty with you, but you refuse to, you know, give me anything to sustain me. You just want to make sure that I come with you in darshan, but you don't want to take care of my material needs. Where am I going to go? I'm not going to go and ask my parents now. You have to take care. If you don't take care, I'm going to live like this without any resources. I'm going to fast, but I'm not going to ask anybody. Now it's your responsibility to take care. This is what I actually told Swami in front of Ganesha. I was very agitated, actually. At the same time, as you said, I couldn't go and tell Swami, oh, give me a job, I need money. It would be quite
quite a thing.
A battering to my image of... but it was the fact. And I have to be honest.
No one really has any clue of what is going on. I mean, you're saying Arun is so lucky.
Yeah.
He's going.
Well, I was.
When no one knows what is going on inside,
yeah,
there's a lot of things.
But still, as Swami said, you can't preach spirituality on an empty stomach. So the empty stomach was beginning to raise its voice now. So the next day morning, Swami came for darshan and he didn't make any gesture. And even I forgot about all my frustration that I vented in the previous evening, and everything went on as usual. Swami went into the interview room, and before closing the door, he gestured with his finger and he called me inside. Mm-hmm. That was quite unexpected. I went inside, and then he called G. Venkatraman sir, who was sitting in the veranda, and he said, this boy, you appoint him in the our Radio Sai Global Harmony. It was quite a shock to both me and GV sir also.
Amazing.
Because I think the information I have is that a few days back, Swami was asked for more resources for Radio Science. Swami just said, not now. So, suddenly out of the blue, I was given as a resource to Radio Sai. I also didn't know what Swami was saying. Then Swami called me inside, introduced me to the other people, and he said, this boy is going to work for Radio Sai. It's going to spread the Swami's message all over. And he called me inside and he said, I'm very, very happy and you do your duty very well. And what do you want from Swami? I said, Swami, always keep me happy because that's what you want. And Swami said, yes, I will always keep you happy. You will always be happy. And that was my dramatic entry into the...
and the elders would have thought that, you know, we had asked Swami for some boy. So now Swami is sitting
yeah,
at our request. I think he
has so many things.
Everything has so many dimensions.
Yeah. So he just waited for the right moment. And so like he pulls the engine after attaching all the coaches. Because if he had given me this previously... without my asking.
Yes.
But this incident where I vented out my frustration inside my heart.
To Ganesha.
And he responded. And he made sure that things fell in place. And the more interesting fact is that by the time I spent my last rupee with me, the next day, the salary from the Central Trust was in my bank account. So, it was just... It
perfect
was amazing.
Timing.
Perfect. And he never gave me a chance to ask for any resources or financial support from anybody after that. It was always a continuous stream of, you know, I was well taken care and he totally lifted the burden of my thoughts. And till date, I think he has been taking care of it. So that was how I actually entered into the Radio Sai. And once in a while, Swami used to call, and when some important VIP used to come, he used to introduce saying, you know, these people are working for Radio Sai. And he used to be very proud of the whole Radio Sai activity.
Mm-hmm.
He used to introduce it with great pride that this is the team working for Radio
Sai.
In fact,
he even did it once in a public discourse.
Yeah, correct.
He mentioned your name and he mentioned that you work in Radio Sai.
Radio Sai.
Messages,
yes,
messages.
Yes. So he was very proud of this unit, as he is proud of all his things, but... I think he was the inspiration behind, I'm sure he is the inspiration and motivation for this entire wing. And it's a great chance. It's like very few people get the opportunity to make their passion their work.
Oh, yes.
You know,
your passion becomes your profession.
Yeah, your passion may be painting, but you may be confined to an auditor's job. So it's a great opportunity, I think. Absolutely. Swami gave for me and for all of you, that you are doing something which you really enjoy. And it's every day is a revelation, I think.
Yes.
For you.
Absolutely.
When somebody comes and shares their experiences.
Yes.
Every experience has a new dimension to it.
Absolutely.
Has a new thrill to it. And it's a great learning experience.
Yes. It's an incomparable boon, definitely. So tell me, Arun, how were those initial days in Radio Sai? And I think it was during that time that Swami actually came to the studio and inaugurated the facility.
Yeah.
And correct. You were very much there at that time.
Yes, yes. So the initial days were really, we were a small team and we were struggling to put in the content because not much information was in the digital form, and most of it was in either some tapes or Swami's discourses were all in tapes which
yes.
were getting old.
Yes.
So we started the job of first classifying the discourses and putting them in order, making them into organized archive.
Yes.
And then capturing all of them in digital format, cleaning them up. So it was a lot of exciting work. And as we did that, I got to hear some wonderful discourses of Swami, some wonderful pieces of brilliant advice which Swami gave. So it was a revelation, you know, as you said, even work was a spiritual experience.
Yes.
Because your work was to archive, but at the same time, you got to listen to
yes.
God's voice. So we were doing all of that, and Swami used to ask once in a while, what is happening? The studio was still not ready.
At that time, you had to fill the radio with only Swami's content.
I mean,
Swami's
his bhajans, content.
His discourses.
Discourses, bhajans, and yes. once in a while, GV sir used to make some talks, and we were trying to call people for interviews. We were still figuring out what to do,
mm.
how to populate it.
Mm.
And it was not a 24-hour radio at that point
time.
Of time.
Mm.
We used to make playlists well in advance and send it to the WorldSpace people where they would upload it to the satellite. And a lot of technology was involved. And the studio wasn't yet ready.
Yes.
It was an EHV building, actually.
Yes, the
current audio recording studio was an EHV building. It wasn't designed as a studio initially, but...
That is where these satsangs used to happen,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
on education and human
values. So it was designed more like an auditorium kind of a thing. And then we actually planned out the studio, how the chamber should be, everything. We drew it with the chalk pieces, and we actually saw the studio coming up. In front
we
of
saw
us,
the building
the
transform into a studio.
Equipment
yeah.
coming and everything.
Yes.
And finally, one day came when we were ready with our equipment and we could do our recording with all the latest gadgets, mics. There were some special trainers who came who gave training on how to do a good audio recording. So lots of things were arranged by Swami. Swami was always giving directions and giving his guidance to Gopal Srinivasan, who was very instrumental in
yes.
setting up the studio and getting
the
things.
CEO of
TVS
Electronics.
So Swami was always getting updates from him and knowing what was happening. And the day came when the studio was ready, and sir had invited Swami, please come and inaugurate the studio. So Swami had come early in the morning. He came in the car after darshan, and he spent a lot of time. He climbed up the steps slowly and absorbed every bit of the studio. He looked at every equipment, he touched every mic, and we were doing our own bit of explaining to Swami, Swami, this is this, from this we can record bhajans, this will go live there, this is how we do the audio editing. And Swami was like, yes, yes, very good, I know. And he went to each and every corner of the studio.
Yes.
And he actually blessed each one of us, including the workers who worked in the studio. The audio trainer, as soon as Swami got down from the car, Swami immediately created Vibhuti and gave to the audio trainer. He was like, I think he had some personal experience. He had some difficulty, and Swami had spoken something to him and gave some Vibhuti, and he was totally in tears. So he recognized not only the students, actually, the people who actually worked behind the scenes. So he made everybody happy. He sat down and he gave a broad direction on how we should all behave, in terms of how knowledge should be converted into skill and
yes.
skill into balance
yes.
and you know.
Balance into insight, yes.
Insight. Very informal conversation. And he materialized a beautiful Rolex watch for Gopal sir. And the whole place was charged with Swami's presence. We kept recollecting, oh, Swami was here. We were hesitant to, you know, every step was sanctified by Swami. Swami. And the time he spent that day, I think, was he surcharged everything with his divine energy. And behind the scenes, it is that which is inspiring and working and making sure that today this wing has grown and he, leaps and bounds.
He perhaps also mentioned that it should grow, right?
Yes, he said, Jagat Vyaptam Kavali, means it has to encompass the whole world, which is in fact...
And in fact, I think if you look at Radio Sai and our activities, the way we've grown in this last, say, one decade, I don't think there's any organization in Prashant Lim which has like grown so much.
Correct.
I mean, in terms of the,
exactly.
The activities, you know, because almost every 6 months, every year, we have started one more new initiative. It is always like that. And thanks to Professor Venkatraman sir's inspiration and enthusiasm and really Swami's blessings and the support of so many listeners and so many devotees worldwide. Were there any occasions, Arun, when, you know, you had chance to mention to Swami about any program that was being done on Radio Sai or Swami inquired about Radio Sai or any specific thing that you recollect about, you know, how Swami guided about any program creation or...
I don't recollect any specific instance of Swami giving a specific direction on the program, but what used to happen is once in a while, suddenly, he used to remark about such and such a program in Radio Sai.
Mm-hmm.
He had a set in his bedroom.
Mm.
And
we the never, world space set.
World space.
Yes.
And we never knew when he would listen to the radio. So once in a while, I think he mentioned to me also that he heard GV sir's talk and, you know, he said like this, he said like that. So he was giving his feedback and I also got to know that he was enjoying listening to his own speeches.
Of yesteryears.
Of yesteryears. So he used to mention, I heard this, I heard that. And it was such a, you know, having God in your listener base.
That was fantastic.
That was,
but that, of course, also it puts on you that much more greater responsibility. To do it.
Yes. Correct.
In the most perfect manner.
Exactly. And
but what else can you explain? What are the greater blessing than you,
exactly,
can have?
So that feeling that Swami could listen to the program any moment, and especially we made sure to put all nice programs in the evening when, yes, Swami had the,
yeah, he was the
time to listen. So he used to give feedback on the programs once in a while. Even the heart-to-heart journal.
Yes.
Every issue we used to go and show it to him. He used to browse through the pages and he was quite involved in the whole exercise.
Mm.
And even GV sir used to update him that we are doing this and that. It was a fantastic experience. And he always used to club the whole thing as I mentioned, a spiritual message.
Yes.
So one day he asked me, how is the radio going on? He said, yeah, it's going on fine, Swami. Do you see the radio waves? He said, mm-hmm. No, Swami. How do you listen to the radio then? So he said, we need to have a set world space receiver. So if you have a world space receiver, can you listen to the Sai Global Harmony, Radio Sai? He said, no, Swami, we need to tune into that frequency 107 or something like that. Then only we can listen. So he said, yes. In the same way, God is everywhere. And you have to tune your body and mind to the right frequency to experience God. Just like the radio waves, he is normally invisible. But when you tune yourself to the right frequency, you will be able to experience God just like you are hearing the Radio Sai Global Harmony through the World Space Radio Satellite. So that was the analogy he gave. Such a simple thing, but such a beautiful message. I recounted this with so many people.
Fantastic. I think that is what Bhagwan was doing all the time. He was all the time ensuring that, you know, we learn how to fine-tune.
Exactly. And for him, everything is a teacher.
everything is an instrument that can be used to give a lesson.
Yeah, I mean, you see him...
It can be a pen, a pencil.
Exactly. I think that is one of the most wonderful aspects that somebody has to research on.
Yes.
How spirituality can be taught with the things that you use daily.
Yes.
He uses a kerchief. He uses a bulb. He uses a radio. I think if we really start thinking, he has used
everything,
small object to convey the message of
plant,
divinity.
A creeper and an ant, everything.
Yeah, his famous example of showing the kerchief and see, I am holding the kerchief and kerchief is not holding me. So you have to leave it. That is one of the experiences he narrates. Or then he says, if you remove the threads, there is no kerchief. Then it's all cotton.
Yes.
So I think he never misses an opportunity, whether it is the world space radio or even the most mundane thing. And he always conveys a message.
Fantastic. And there are occasions when if he wanted to convey something and if for example, the kerchief was not enough or the mic was not enough, he just waved his hand and he created something. Something very simple. It could be some lemon, it could be
exactly,
some coin.
Exactly.
Something. That's, I mean, you can go on, you know, deliberating on the various facets of Swami as the Master Supreme. As a preceptor who was so unparalleled and
exactly.
So unconventional.
Exactly. His was not a classroom teaching. His was a circumstantial teaching. And he integrated his teaching with every act of his. He made it very informal. I think discourses are the most minuscule part of Swami's teachings. The rest of the thing is the way he conducted himself. Right. The way he used situations to teach you lessons and the way he related to each and every student or devotee in the ashram or anywhere else. I think it's only God who can parallelly give each one of us what is needed for us at that moment. And the scale on which he did that, the ease with which he did that, I think it's unparalleled and beyond the imagination of anybody.
Absolutely. I mean, many times I tend to think that, you know, when God comes down as a guru in a physical form, the kind of spiritual growth which would have possibly maybe taken you 10 births to achieve, it just sort of gets telescoped.
Exactly.
You experience that probably in 10 minutes.
Exactly.
That growth just happens.
Exactly. That's what he says, that this is a workshop in which, you know, he makes things right, and this is a black box. We don't know really what is happening, but at the end of the exposure, you know that something has changed, something has transformed, and now you are more confident, happy, and a person with a purpose. Once I asked, what sadhana do we need to do when we come to Swami?
You asked Bhagwan.
Yes. So Swami said, if the coal wants to become the fire, what should it do? I said, it needs to come to the fire. Automatically, it will become fire itself. So Swami said, it is like that with God. All you need to do is to be near God. When I say near, it's not near. To feel the nearness to God. When you feel the nearness to God, automatically you will start transformation. You need not do anything special. Always if you remember that God is near you, that you are near God, that nearness, that experience of nearness itself will have a transformative effect. I think that is what he kept on conveying to me when he showed his omniscience subtly. Wherever you are, whatever your thoughts, I am with you. I am with you. The very fact that you are feeling a nearness to God, I'm not talking about the physical proximity. I'm talking about a mental proximity. You may be thousands of miles away from Bhagwan, but if you feel his nearness always, sannidhi, I think your life starts getting transformed automatically. And even if you are just a few centimeters away from him, but if you don't really feel the nearness, then there's no transformative effect. But Swami said, all you need to do is feel that I am with you. I am near you. I am in you. And rest of it, Bhagwan will take care.
Then life will become a celebration. Actually.
Yeah. So he kind of totally took out the whole assumption of effort on your part. The only effort you need to do is always have a constant remembrance of his nearness to us. And rest of it, I think he promised to take care and he continues to take care.
Amazing.
Finally, I think we've been talking for 2 hours now, and I think possibly we'll pause at this time.
I think we'll
wait for you to come again.
That'll give me another opportunity to come back to this place.
No, you're most welcome all the time. But I think I'm really very thankful to Bhagwan and of course to you for taking time out and really sharing such priceless moments. And even if you take all the moments that you have today shared, I feel that we have only spoken about one dimension of that experience.
Yes.
If you just take one experience and think about it deeply, we'll probably realize we'll find another 5 angles to it.
Exactly.
And 5 ways by which we can look at it and how it can enrich us.
And that is
how fantastic it is when God comes down in a human form. Fantastic. Finally, Arun, what is now the mantra of your life?
The mantra of my life is that I strive to be happy always, and I always remember the phrase which Swami taught me in my first convocation drama, that this too shall pass, that everything that is happening in my life is an experience which is momentary, which is given by God, and that I need to live my life to the fullest extent and make my life a joyous celebration, because that is the best offering that I feel I can give to Bhagwan for all the effort that he has invested in me. So my motto is, as Bhagwan said, be happy and make others happy. It's very simple. But I think that was the most difficult things to achieve. Not that I have perfected it, but I constantly strive to fill my heart with the joy of blessings and divine guidance that God has given, and try to be happy so that people around me, my family, my friends, and society in general benefits from all the effort that Swami has invested in me. So, be happy is my motto. Make others happy is my motto.
Fantastic. I think, as Bhagwan used to say, Mi anandame na aharamu. I think the greatest tribute that we can pay to Bhagwan, the best way we can offer our gratitude to Bhagwan, as you expressed so beautifully, is if you are all the time happy, then, you know, he feels so happy. And that is what is his food. That is what he always persevered and struggled,
he named it Radio Sai Global Harmony.
Harmony, yes.
That's what we need, harmony.
Yes. Fantastic. Thank you very much, Arun. And I hope we can meet again and dwell on his message and these fleeting moments, which are really, as you mentioned in the beginning, these are lessons for lifetime.
Exactly. And these are lessons not only for a lifetime, but for generations to come.
Yes.
And I think by preserving this, by archiving this, and by making everything that Swami has so lovingly shared with us, generations to come will benefit from such an exercise of listening to the glory of how Bhagwan transformed each and every individual that came to him, as well as the entire earth. So I think it's not lessons for life, it's lessons for ages to come.
Yes.
I think this will be the Bible and the Bhagavad Gita and the Quran for our future generations.
Absolutely.
On how to make this wonderful place called earth, which Bhagwan has created, a better place, and a place full of joy and full of celebrating the divinity in the human being.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Arun.
Thank you very much, and look forward to come back here soon.
Oh yes, I am too. I am waiting for that.
Thank you.
Sit down.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, You were listening to the fourth part of the conversation with K. Arun Kumar, an alumnus of Bhagwan's University, who after his graduation in IIT Kharagpur, did his MBA in Baba's University in 2001. Later, he had the opportunities to serve Bhagwan at close quarters and also work in Radio Sai for some time. Currently, he is based in Hyderabad and is involved in the activities of the Sai organization there. This was yet another episode of our series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. This was recorded on July 14th, 2013, and in conversation with him was Radio Sai's Bishop Roshdi. Do send your feedback to this program as always to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sai Ram.